Secretary of Transportation, the Director of the Department of Assessments and Taxation, and a public member appointed by the governor. And I have the honor of chairing that commission. The commission meets every year after the legislative session has adjourned so that we know what is in the budget to pay the debt service of the state for the bonds we issue for the schools and prisons and other facilities. The tax rate has been set for most homeowners, for everyone except utility companies, really, at 11.2% for the last several years. That is 11.2 cents on every $100 goes to a fund which is dedicated and used only to pay the service on the bonds for schools and other important buildings. And we met, we looked at the budget, we looked at anticipated debt payments and came to the unanimous resolution that the level should stay constant as it has been for the last several years. It was raised only once in 2000 and it has been at a constant rate since 1980 until the It was raised in 2003 for the first time since 1980. It was raised to 13.2%. It was raised 5 cents. 3 years later, it was reduced to 11%.
Right,
and that's where it has been, on the eve of the election, and that's where it has been ever since. So, once again, we are able to keep it constant. It was a prior administration governor that raised it.
Raised the property
in history. Yes.
So the only time in history?
That's right. Well, at least the only time since 1980, I wouldn't say that.
Governor ever raised property taxes.
In this report, which is on the website and can be put in anyone's hands who's interested in seeing it, we lay out what all the numbers are. But the motion from the commission is to keep the tax rate constant.
Not to raise it like it was raised.
Not to raise it as it was raised. No.
Well, I agree with that. I think this is the worst possible tax to raise. So that's the motion.
That's
seconded by the controller. That's sound, fiscal responsible.
Yes.
Fiscally responsible motion, I think. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. Should we do the balance of the secretary's agenda now? Controller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Budget and Management. Right? I'm sorry. The program open space. Sina, I give you a complex.
Good morning, Governor, Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller Meredith Lasbury with the Department of Natural Resources. This morning we had two items on the open space agenda, one local project and one rural legacy project. Also before you, these trees are from our state nursery in celebration of Earth Day, so I hope you'll plant them well someplace special or in honor of someone special. We also have a stack of coupons here. You can, for other folks in the room, you can get $25 off of a tree at local nurseries. And Don Van Hassen, who's our associate director of forestry, has a whole bag of trees.
That's great. You like Johnny Appleseed. I don't have my own yard anymore. I need some place to plant them. And J.B. Howard is here from the Attorney General's office. Without Attorney General Gansler's hard work, we would not have had the recovery, which allowed us to make the investment in replacing our or increasing our tree canopy, which is what funds these coupons, which also helps small businesses, family-owned businesses, nurseries throughout the state of Maryland. We challenge Marylanders in the Marylanders Grow Trees website to take advantage of this recovery that the Attorney General won for us by planting trees. I think we're at about 44,000 of the 50,000 that we challenge people to do. So maybe on Earth Day, we go over our goal. So I'm sorry. So we have two things here. We have the acquisition in Anne Arundel County of 46 acres to the South River Greenway.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This is a very good thing, isn't it?
That's right. The South River Greenway, they're building up to 3,000 acres. For that, it is an incredibly special project. Ken Alden from Anne Arundel County can give you some more details or answer any questions you might have. But the South River Greenway is one of those rare places that is protecting the headwaters of streams, and it's in a nestled into a very populated area. So lots of hiking opportunities and places for folks to fish as well.
Are there trails on this greenway?
There are trails.
Who's here from Anne Arundel wants to tell us about this? I was heading to D.C. early in the morning the other day, and as I went over the South River heading west, I saw three bald eagles soaring around first thing in the morning.
Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, thank you very much for this opportunity. Speaking about trees, yes, we have about 1,100 acres located about 10 minutes from the State House, which is known as the South River Greenway, adjacent to Route 97 near the Crownsville Hospital. We've been working with Meredith Lathbury, Chip Price, and Secretary Griffin now for 2.5 years. The board has approved numerous properties using program open space funds, and we have an opportunity to purchase an additional 46 acres known as the Page property. Yes, there are currently numerous trails throughout the Bacon Ridge Greenway, which is a portion of the larger South River Greenway. We have a stewardship committee formed with folks from the Scenic Rivers Land Trust, the South River Federation, Department of Natural Resources, etc. And we are working with that stewardship committee to have plans for the future as far as improved public access. And certainly there will be an extensive trail system through the property. It is definitely being preserved for the public use. We do not want intensive active recreation by any means. This is for the birders, the hikers, and the people to enjoy this tremendous asset very close to the Capitol.
How does one access it?
Pardon me?
How does one access it?
Currently, there's access off Hawkins Road. We also have access through the Crownsville Hospital property. We work very closely with Maryland Environmental Services, who has an access point through the Crownsville Hospital property. We are scheduling events out there for the public's opportunity to go in. We do have to make improvements at some point as far as parking and improved access before we can open it up entirely to the public. We had a walk just this past Saturday. We have an annual walk in the woods, which some naturalists from our office conduct walks. We take the public out. It was well advertised. We had some 300 people participate in last Saturday's walk in the woods, and they got a taste and a flavor for this tremendous asset. There's a tremendous pond on the property, which is absolutely incredible. When you walk down from the ridge line from Route 97 and you get into the valley of the stream valley, the noise from 97 disappears instantaneously. It's amazing to walk from the ridge line down into the valley.
I'd love for you to give
tremendous asset.
A better map that shows the where those trails are and where you pick them up.
I can certainly do that. We have those in our office.
Great. Yeah, could you send it to me? I'd be grateful.
I would certainly do that.
And the South and the Magazine, the Severn, they're all so stressed right now. I mean, the amount of development and the septic systems leaching into those rivers, that they're some of the most damaged rivers in the entire Chesapeake Bay. So hopefully this keeps giving us a fighting chance protecting these headwaters.
Yes, sir. It ranks very high on the Greenway infrastructure rankings, and also our watershed management people in the county have it as one of the most challenged tributaries of the bay. Mm-hmm. And we think by preserving these properties, it's going to make a tremendous benefit to South River and ultimately to Chesapeake Bay.
Got to find some way to get those, do something about that septic. It's the biggest contributor, that and the stormwater, biggest two contributors and on these three. Are there any plans to hook people up to sewer or those sorts of things in any systematic way?
Well, certainly in this area where we're limiting development, and we've done quite a bit to preserve a lot of land in there, some of the property owners have requested to carve out a lot here and there, but they will be on private septic, and certainly we encourage property owners to work with the state and try to find the best possible solutions to septic flow.
Do people know that they, when a system is failing, I mean, I assume there's some something in the atmosphere, but
I'm not an engineer and not an expert in septic systems, but certainly haven't experienced it somewhat with my situations.
People know that something's wrong with their septic system, they're going to want to fix it, but I guess the problem is that it's not apparent for years.
Well, it's certainly expensive to go in and replace a system. Certainly effluent is very evident on the ground when a system totally fails, and surely we know that our toilets and facilities in our homes begin to show the problem. I think most people, neighbors keep an eye on those types of things. At least I've found that in my community, and when you start seeing the problems, people are usually notified to make some corrections. But
so do you have
it's
any
an ongoing problem, no question.
Any eagles over there?
Yes, sir, we do. We have some nesting eagles and blue heron on the pond, and it's an amazing resource. We'd love to have the board come out sometime.
Excellent.
Still hike some more instead of just...
That's a great idea.
Chairing the trees.
I remember when the eagles came back to the canal, to the river, to the Potomac, which happens to be my backyard. We knew that we were turning things around.
Well, great. Thanks very much.
And I would, if I could just take a moment, thank the governor and the board for supporting Program Open Space, continuing the funding of Program Open Space, creative financing with selling bonds to keep the program going, and Meredith and Chip Price, pleasure to work with. Tremendous support from the staff at Program Open Space in these tough times to keep things moving, and we thank you and the legislature for funding the program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We now move on to the Department of Budget Management.
Mm-hmm. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are five items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions in Department of Budget and Management agenda item. Mr. Comptroller.
On the first item, Madam Secretary, could you just give us a few details as to what this five-year, $371,000 contract with options to Johnson, Merriam, and Thompson?
So this is a contract to obtain technical assistance for property acquisition and relocation services for the MTA's real estate division. Actually, George Fabula, who is manager of the real estate division, is here to answer any specific or technical questions you may have.
Good morning. My name is George Fabula, manager for the real estate division for the Maryland Transit Administration. This action item is a task order contract with no minimum guarantee of work to support property acquisition and relocation services throughout the MTA transit area, service area.
I noticed the other two bidders were disqualified. Is there some reason why there isn't more competitive bidding on this? It seems pretty...
It's a pretty finite, specialized task, and not many firms out there actually perform this type of task.
And the detail, exactly what they're going to do, isn't this just kind of ordinary real estate work that is pretty boilerplate?
Well, we have the in-house people for the acquisition parts. We don't have the expertise in-house for any relocation services. So if we did have an acquisition that would need that, we would outsource that portion of the project.
Okay. Let me ask about, I don't know whether you're the right person or Madam Secretary or someone else. What is the status of the Purple Line MTA acquiring easements or property for construction of the either the Purple Line in the Washington area or the Red Line in the Baltimore region?
I defer to the Secretary of Transportation.
For the record, Beverly Swains Daly, Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. Both the Red Line and the Purple Line at this point are in the planning process. We have submitted the information, the paperwork, to the FTA to begin what is essentially a national competition to receive the funds for both the Red and the Purple Line. So we are hoping to we're actually working with the FTA to complete the design and evaluation phases to finalize the cost analysis, ridership analysis, those kinds of things, hoping that by next year, if there's new funding and a new reauthorization, we'd be ready for those projects to compete with other projects around the country for, hopefully, construction funds ultimately. So part of these relocation services, and the reason we haven't really needed it for quite a long time before, is that the anticipation for some relocation that would be required as a result of the Red Line and the Purple Line.
But those two projects are pretty well positioned if
we believe, again, there's going to be a lot of competition for them nationally, a lot of projects around the country, but we believe they are well within the cost formulas that are recommended, and obviously we're going to do everything we can to make sure that they compete well.
Okay. And then I just had a final comment about the fact that apparently some of the additional property you're looking for is commuter bus property in southern Maryland, and that is such a successful, crucially important program. You know, for those of you that have been down there, know what the traffic situation is on those routes coming into Washington. So
you're correct, and the demand there is extensive.
And is that still paying for itself as far as ridership?
The buses are full. I mean, with the fares that we charge there, essentially all of our bus services continue to be subsidized to some extent. But you are correct in that it's very successful. And we continue to try to find more park and rides. And as we find park and rides and add more bus service, those buses fill up. So it's a very popular service.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
What could we use for rail line down there?
Really popular.
Are we done? Where are we on studying the rail line? To Southern Maryland?
We are studying things on projects for Southern Maryland. One would for along a existing rail corridor.
Right.
But there's interest in a couple, potentially maybe two different options there for the future.
Give me any update on that.
Sure.
So you can pile on the corridor cities line.
Corridor cities?
Yeah. What's the status of that?
That's also just a little bit behind the Purple Line and the Red Line, and frankly, that's why there's really agreement because of the road and the West Gaithersburg Master Plan. So we have agreed because we think that that will make the numbers look even better in terms of ridership and cost-benefit analysis. We had planned to keep that project in sync with the Red Line and the Purple Line, but the request of the county, we have put that back now until they complete that planning process because, again, we think it's going to make those numbers look much better. There's a lot of interest out there in with the development community as well. So we think that, you know, there may be some unique opportunities for financing there.
Okay.
I have a question about item 3, yes, which candidly I hadn't noticed until last night.
Item 3 is a contract that provides consulting services that will assist MSD in the development of these standardized course descriptions, basically for the purpose of making sure that they are consistent with the course descriptions that are used by the local school systems. I'm not sure if Dr. Grassman can see it.
Oh, she is there.
Dr. Grassman,
we
didn't see
She was hidden away.
Good article today about the national standards too.
Yes.
Even the teachers of the year liked it.
Very excited. Good morning, Governor. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. The course codes are a critical part of our meeting the obligations of both legislation and the longitudinal data system. Currently, often, every school has a different set of course codes, and it's very difficult to align those across the state to really know that in school X, students are getting Algebra 1, and it's the same thing in school B. And then, of course, from system to system, it's different. So what we're trying to do is to align all of those course codes so that we can actually follow the course enrollment of the students as they matriculate through those courses. And I have with me Dr. Leslie Wilson, who is responsible for all of our assessment of programs and ability to obviously deliver on the longitudinal data system.
I mean, there's some things that sort of fly beneath the radar but are fantastically important and exciting. Yeah. I think this looks like it's one of them. Do you anticipate that when this is finished, you can actually more closely correlate particularly high school courses and college expectations? I mean, I recall one of the problems is, as I understand, for instance, in mathematics, the math faculty understanding a label of a course differently than the high school math faculty does, for instance.
Yes, it's not only the code, but then we're going to drill down to what is the actual content.
Right.
And the governor, through the PETA 20 council, appointed a task force on college and career success. And one of the recommendations that we're putting forth as a result of the task force's work is to ensure that there is absolute alignment and no semantic space between what higher ed would interpret as the content of a course and what we interpret as the content of a course. But this course coding is very critical to that process.
And what's the timing of this project?
Leslie Wilson, I'm the Assistant Superintendent for Accountability and Assessment. We hope to have this project completed within 1 year. It's part of a federal grant that we have.
That's super.
Yeah. It's a big step forward.
Yeah, it really is.
So, thank you.
Terrific. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions on board? Or rather, the Department of Budget Management. Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move now to University of System, Maryland, where I spoke yesterday at the School of Public Policy. Kids are pumped up. Campus looked great.
Thank you.
College Park was also at Salisbury yesterday, which is consistently rated as one of the top 50 best four-year comprehensive public universities in the country.
Salisbury University?
Mm-hmm. By U.S. News and also the Princeton Review. And they also have one of our state's leading GIS programs.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing...
An outstanding alumni.
Yes. Former employees.
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Foxwell was...
You went to Salisbury. So you were a Seagull.
In a former life, or?
It's a lot easier to get into back.
Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 8 items on the agenda today. Here to answer any questions.
It is impressive how many of the projects involve aiming for LEEDS Gold,
yes,
which is, I know, is the region's intent, but it's nice to see it actually also in the specific projects themselves.
It's all going.
I have a
question, if I could. Is one of the items, I know Coffin State's got a couple of items in here, but wasn't there one, I can't find it right now, but like a $7 million
AE contract?
Item one, I think.
Right. Yes, sir.
Just help me understand why in an urban area like this with a $7 million contract, we only have a 18% MBE.
With the MBE, we looked at it to assess how much MBE we could get from the AE. Most of it, of the MBE, will come from structural, landscaping, and design, interior design. Majority of the design will be done by the architect. So 18% is normally about the percentage we get, somewhere between 15 to 18% normally on these type of AE contracts.
Even in an urban area like this?
Yes, sir.
So if I see other A&E projects here, they're all going to be 15 to 18%. They're not going to be 20, 25%.
For the ones in our area, for this particular project, and we look to assess how much MBE we could get from this project and the potential for MBE subcontracts, the amount that we came up with was 18%.
Okay. Just following up, item 7 and 8. Which are also Coppin State?
Yes, sir.
Can you help me understand? These are relatively small items, but I noticed one of the properties has two different appraisals, one at $67,500 and one at $28,000, and we're ending up paying $65,000. What supply is there such a big spread?
I have Mr. Stephen Brown, the real estate acquisition manager, who will come up and address that.
Stephen Brown from University, from Coppin State University.
Excellent.
Any question was?
The question is, we have two bids. I don't know whether it's you or the system that should respond, but we have two appraisals, $67,500 and $28,000. This is a really small issues, but I guess they all add up. Why do we why are we gravitating towards the higher amount? Why not gravitate towards the lower amount every once in a while?
Well, we certainly start at the lower amount, but the the reality is that the owners are negotiating hard, and they feel that their properties are actually worth more than what we're offering. So the end price generally tends to be towards the high appraisal. We negotiate with them, I assure you.
This property owner didn't even apparently let the appraisers into the house.
He did not. I can't explain his behavior.
I just find it to be strange that this, you say that it's a tough negotiation. It doesn't sound like there was much toughness on our side.
Well. We talk to the owners, we work with them, we try to get them to agree, and that's just generally the result of the negotiations, is that we do end up towards the high appraisal. I assure you there's a lot of back and forth between the university and the owners.
Okay. It's not particularly impressive from my standpoint, but have you even had access to the house at this point, or are you still negotiating? What's inside that? I mean, is the house... what is the interior condition? Is it Even close to being worth $65,000?
We still have not had access to the inside of the house. Mr. Briscoe is a particularly difficult person.
Do you want to vote on this one separately?
Sure.
Okay. This is item 15C.
Eight.
I'm sorry?
Page 15C.
This was purchased for consolidation of a lot for the new science and technology center planned at Coughlin, right?
Yes, sir.
It's across the street from Coughlin.
Is across the street.
Across North Avenue, I mean? Or?
North Avenue, West North Avenue.
Mm-hmm. No, I you know, support the project at Coppin. I love Coppin, but I'm just a little surprised that we're buying a house without having looked inside it, number one. Number two, I guess I'm wondering if the university has a policy in these kinds of negotiations where we can get a better deal for the state if it's appropriate. I mean, literally, we've never seen the inside of this house, and we're paying $65,000 for it.
But we're looking to knock it down, right?
And it's to be demolished.
Yeah, but the second appraisal was $28,000. Not to, you know, stand on small amounts, but I guess it's the principle of the thing.
This question is how, again, how you arrived at 28. I mean, how you arrived at 65. It's two less than 67, but it's a lot more than 28.
It's when we have instances where we don't gain access to the interior of the house, it's not unusual to have a big spread in the appraisals. The appraisers have to, you know, they're somewhat subjective in what they, you know, have to determine the interior condition to be. They don't actually see it.
And well, the governor mentioned we're going to knock the house down. So the question is, what's the value of the house that we're going to knock down? And I just find this to be unusual in the way that... if you're telling me this is standard operating procedure, that's, I guess, even I would hope the system could examine this, because it, well, who knows what's inside the door when you finally open it up? Maybe it is only worth $28,000.
Well, and the truth is that there will be a number of houses that we purchase that we, because the owners are have disappeared. Because the owners won't have passed away, there will be a number of houses that we won't gain access to. That's kind of the reality of buying in a neighborhood like this.
Aren't a number of these houses in this block owned by the city already?
I'm sorry?
Aren't a number of the houses in this block owned by the city of Baltimore already?
I don't know what the number is in this block. Mm-hmm. In this area, we're bringing a contract to this board for 16 properties at the next meeting. I don't know how many are in this block.
Mm-hmm. It's the same block I'm thinking of. I mean, some, you know, they knew this development was coming, and they, you know, would certainly. I'm certain that the city does own those properties pretty clear. That's probably part of the consolidation for this block. But then you have private homeowners who are there and own their properties, and I guess the calculation made on this is the amount of time that it would cost in terms of delaying the project or preventing the site from being consolidated versus paying this person to get out of the way.
Exactly. We don't have a lot of alternatives.
You're probably gaining a number of properties, I would imagine, this site, absolutely, you know, for nominal dollar value from the city.
Yes.
If it's the same block.
Yes, that is true. And then after after the fair market value is paid for this property, we have to pay the relocation. The relocation provides a roof. We have to pay that amount no matter what we have to pay for the value of the property.
How much is that here?
I believe it was
$85,700.
And that's in addition to, so it was about a total of, I think, $150,000.
Well, I'm sure someone's looking at it and they can look at the, I don't know whether anyone's ever sold a comparable in the market in this area in the last, recently, but if you could take a look at it and help me understand the university's policy, systems policy, as opposed to Coffin's policy, I would be appreciative.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm probably going to vote against this one. But.
Okay, let's call 15C individually. Governor moves approval. This is item rather 8-RP on page 15C. We're calling it individually. Governor moves approval. Second by the Treasurer?
I will, but I too would like to have a better understanding, looking at the other properties on this block, looking at this one, of what the university's policy is at arriving at a fair value when you have two assessments, which it's true, neither of them are great, are terribly high, but so different.
We'll get back.
But this is a very important project, one we've been working on for many years.
Maybe you need to bring us the plat, show us the block, how it all fits into the consolidation.
Now, this one's the 1800, the other was the 1600.
And, Governor, I'm going to vote no, but if you could also just help me understand the policy, because all of the campuses, I take it, are expanding and moving forward with different projects, which we all appreciate and support, but I'd like to know what the procedure is for getting the best deal for the state.
Yes, sir. Okay. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. Comptroller votes no. Motion passes. We move on now to the balance of the University System of Maryland agenda items. Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This morning, we have six items on our agenda. We'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Any questions? Department of Information Technology.
I just have a question out of curiosity, actually, of MDOT on item 5 IT.
Sure.
The automated, what was that?
Item 5 deals with the updates and maintenance to the voice enunciated system. We have some colleagues from MDOT who can answer any questions.
And my question of MDOT is, when you have a project, is it echoing? Oh, weird. When you have a project like this, do you lay out operating goals? You're putting in place this new IT system or refurbished IT system or whatever. How you expect to see that reflected in improved maintenance or improved on time or operating indices like that?
I think on this one we're rebidding this one, but yes, particularly I won't say that with everyone, but I know we had a number of issues that we needed to address, both from the ADA community and other service issues, when we first went with Clever Devices, and we could certainly probably get you some data in terms of of the improvements that have resulted as a result.
And
of
that
it.
You anticipate when,
right.
when you,
right.
It was more of a generic question. But, yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Confirm this approval of the Department of Information and Technology, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Transportation. Don't, as opposed to do it.
For the record, Beverly Swank Daly, representing MDOT, representing 16 items today. Item 14 has been previously revised, and item 16 has been previously added as a supplemental item. And we're here to answer questions.
Mr. Comptroller.
Item 9 is a $440,000 contract for lawn and turf maintenance in Montgomery County. Why can't we do this with existing SHA employees? Is there something I'm missing in this project?
Well, we do some landscaping with existing employees, but we have traditionally done a great deal of it through contracts for a number of years, so it isn't new. We've also been obviously downsizing the workforce over a number of years and contracting out more as a result of that. But this is just the way that we have handled these kind of contracts historically, because it's, you know, much of it is on an as-needed basis. Some of it is seasonal. Some of it, you know, is work-related due to storms and other things. So it's, you know, again, something we do some with our existing forces, but we enhance it with contractual forces.
Okay. Will they do the medians? Or?
Again, some we do with existing, but, yes, mm-hmm. in many cases we do contract work for do everything from mowing to landscaping to planting wildflowers in the medians. Mm-hmm.
And they're all small business, all Maryland small businesses.
This one's small business reserve. Uh-huh. And that, obviously they get a lot of the work for, because of the kind of work that they can do, and MBEs as well, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions on the Department of Transportation budget item? I mean, agenda item? Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor. I'm Matt Berger. I'm from Al Collins.
Al, have you seen that Maryland job creation chart that's over your head there?
Yes, sir.
Looks good, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
See that job creation shooting up on the positive side of that x-axis?
Absolutely. It's the way to go. We're trying every day to add more to that.
I didn't see it until I looked right at you. It was coming over your shoulder.
Yeah, I saw it when I came in.
It's a beautiful thing. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
No problem. That's great news.
I was awestruck.
The Department of General Services has 17 items on our agenda, including one supplemental. As we'd be glad to answer any questions you might have on the items.
Great agenda.
Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. And that concludes our agenda. Thank you very, very much, ladies and gentlemen. One Maryland. Forward together. Forward, not back.